Welcome to the Underbelly Podcast, brought to you by Clarity Financial, as we peek underneath, poke around, and expose what other outlets don't want you to know about finance, economics, politics, and, well, pretty much everything. Good afternoon. I am Brent Clanton. With me in the Clarity Financial studios this afternoon, Mike O'Neill and John Camarianis. We're going to do this live, so you're going to see me back away from the microphone a little bit, do some switching around on some knobs and sliders and switches and stuff.
Would you please, please get to work?
That's right. So let's start off with our little market summary for today, and actually for the week. We've had a lot to affect what's been going on.
It has been a crazy day out there. Greetings to everyone out there in podcast land. So, yeah, we as we're looking at the markets are blowing up right now. Everything is up 1.5%. The Dow is up 1.5% now. It's up at 373.375. I don't even know why I keep saying it changes, right? 375. No, 374. No, wait. It's 374. Okay.
It's up a percent and a half.
It's up a percent and a half, yeah. And the NASDAQ is up 105 points. That's 1.4%. The S&P is up 37%. That's 1.3%. Yep. What is happening out there? What's making the markets go so crazy out there? John, what you got?
I guess the first thing is the jobs report that came out this morning. I think we added 313,000 new jobs in February.
Right.
Also, the 2 months prior to that were revised upward, an extra 15,000 jobs in December and an extra 39,000 jobs in January. So
Those are some big climbs.
Yeah, they're big climbs.
People love hearing that we're adding jobs.
That's right.
You know, and we've been adding jobs, you know, pretty steadily at least since 2009, I guess.
That's right. Although it is interesting, 2 weeks ago, the fear was the economy would overheat. We had interest rate spikes or fears of interest rate spikes.
Yeah.
Now the 10-year Treasury is kind of stuck at 2.8, 2.9, or seemingly so. And now good news is good news again. Good news is not bad news anymore.
You say the bond market is stuck at 2.9, but 2.9, that seems to be kind of a dangerous threshold for bonds.
Yes.
For the yield, rather. For yield, because and that's when the stock people, they're like, you know, 2.9 is a pretty good return. Maybe we'll put some of our money over there.
Well, yeah, that's what happened 2 weeks ago. Now it seems to be okay. Now, as I said, good news is good news. More jobs means a strong economy, and the stock market seems to like that this week.
Yeah, but the one number that we always take a look at, you know, because we are the underbelly, so we like to look at the things that not everybody always looks at.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it's, behind the scenes,
exactly, is the labor force participation
rate.
That's
right.
And that number was, do you have it?
That's in the low 60s. It's 63 now, I think.
63. It went up. It had been for a long while. It had been 62.7.
Yeah.
So that means that only of all the people who could work,
right,
only 62% are actually working or looking for work. Mm-hmm. That means that 37% of the people out there who are eligible to work have just either given up, you know, and they're not even counted in unemployment numbers, right?
They're not.
So they've just kind of like dropped out.
Yeah, that's right. They've dropped out of the labor. They've stopped looking for jobs. In fact, yeah.
So what do they do when they stop looking for jobs? They just lay on the couch and eat chips all day.
Some of them must. No.
Are they working for cash under the radar?
Oh, that's true.
There could be some of that.
A lot of under the table kind of payments, mm-hmm, going on there. Yeah.
Contract work, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's possible. And then it could just be living in your folks' basement, depending on your age.
Which is tough in Houston since we don't have basements down here.
Exactly. Right. You have to be really down low if you're going to be hiding in a basement down in Houston. We should have that clip ready. There's no basement at the Alamo, right? From Pee Wee Herman. So, of course, you know, so like I said, you know, 63%, that's our labor force participation rate. And that number, as we've discussed several times on our reports on Real Investment News, is that is number, that's in the late 70s. We haven't been this low on the labor force participation, mm-hmm, since the late 70s.
Right.
You know, so the high, I think, was in the, I think we were looking at the numbers,
99, 2000, looked like, I think we're at 67.2, something like that.
Right.
High 60s, let's say.
High 60s. And so,
low 60s.
It's been, we've been You know, it's like, so we've been higher. I mean, at some point, I guess, you know, 33% of people not working. That's, you know, I don't know how big of a difference it is. But we have a growing population.
Yeah.
I forgot to account for that. We have more people out there in the working force. And we actually have more people, of course, who are retiring. The baby boomers who are dropping out by the thousands every day.
So the denominator number is getting bigger.
Yeah.
Relative to the numerator of people not working.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, this is a finance class, not a mathematical class. Thank you. Let us not go there, can we? Of course, there was a lot of big concern because, you know, first of all, so much has been happening on Capitol Hill. Because, you know, and up in Washington because of what is going on. That little music sting that you hear there, that means we're changing subjects. I tried to make it a clever segue, but Brent wants to make it obvious.
It's called entertainment.
Entertainment, right? Yeah. It's like we got to break it up as you're fast-forwarding on your podcast. Oh, they've just changed subjects. So here's the new but yet not totally unrelated subject. Everybody was watching about these tariffs.
Yeah.
And President Trump signed him despite the advice of his national economic advisor, Gary Cohn, who said, well, if you're not going to bother listening to me, why am I here?
That's right. Ex-national advisor.
Now he's now ex-Cohn. And then, excuse me. Oh, that's why I have the cough button, right? totally missed the cough button there.
Never mind, it's a live taping. Just go ahead, clear your throat.
Whatever. I'm editing the post. I may clear that out, make myself sound great. I may make myself sound like you, Brent.
Oh, there you go.
I'm going to adjust the bass there.
I'm just lip syncing over here.
So he went ahead and signed these tariffs. It's like Republican leaders are saying, please, God, no. And, you know, and his economic advisors are saying no. And China and the European Union and the UK, they're all saying no. But he did it anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, what is the purpose? Okay, well, first of all, let's just briefly talk, because I feel like we're already kind of blowing through our subjects here time-wise. So let's talk a little bit. What tariffs actually mean for those who are maybe not 100% comfortable with the subject.
Yeah, so tariffs mean when steel, for example, now comes into the country, there will be a 25% tax that has to be paid to the U.S. government on all imported steel, and 10% on aluminum.
So basically, it's like when people are sending steel over to us, they have to pay an additional percentage on top of that.
Right.
And consequently, that steel, like say if it's the steel coming from China, because the president is always talking about the trade deficit with China. So when that steel is coming in, the steel from China is going to cost 25% more.
That's right. It's going to be that much more expensive. And so then our steel will be able to compete with it.
Okay.
And already steel mills have announced that some companies have announced that they're opening new mills as a result.
And the benefit of this is that you can offset, right? I mean, it's like if you have like lower labor costs over there in China, you know, they're producing the steel cheaper.
That's right.
And of course, the concern is that they would flood the market with cheap steel, and our steel makers cannot keep up.
Right.
And so consequently, that's the reason, and that's the thought behind it. But we don't live in this vacuum. Because then what happens is that you get the retaliations.
Right. Yeah, so, right. So cheaper manufacturing around the world has arguably put middle-class jobs in this country at jeopardy. Foreign workers work for cheaper wages, and so that's the incentive for President Trump to do that. Of course, there are knockoff effects. So there are now something on the order of 200,000 steel workers in this country, and this policy certainly benefits them. Of course, there's another 6 million workers, according to some reports, who do things, who bend steel and make products out of it.
Right.
Manufacturing.
Right. And so these jobs now become more precarious because the raw material that they use is now more expensive. So we're helping 200,000 steel workers, but we're arguably jeopardizing another 6 million people who bend metal.
And I've got a qualitative question, too. I mean, how does Chinese steel compare in quality to U.S. steel? Do we know?
I don't.
I don't.
I don't know.
I haven't got a clue.
If it says made in China on it, right?
The steel that they put into the Titanic,
right?
They discovered after the fact that it was faulty. It was flawed steel and turned more brittle in cold water, which led to part of what was the disaster of the Titanic sinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if there's much of a difference, and I'm sure somebody watching this podcast will know, and you can post your answer right here if you will.
Please.
We'd love to hear from you.
Because
how do the two manufacturing processes compare?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think as you were saying that, I think I have someone who's typing me a comment. I think it's my friend Charlotte, but we'll see.
Good.
We'll see if she's saying anything other than hi, Mike. I don't know. Not to say anything, Charlotte, but I'm just saying that a lot of my friends, they probably can't think of anything more clever than that. So.
Oh man.
I know.
That's rough.
I know. This is how you generate friends.
And how much steel are we getting from China, by the way? If the United States manufacturing universe uses X amount of steel every year, how much of that steel comes from China?
Well, and I was just reading about this. China actually produces 49% of the world's steel, which I think is an amazing concern. And this also, you know, and I'll get to this point, this is why the EU was so objected to us doing this to China.
Mm-hmm.
But only of the amount of steel that we import, only 3% of it actually does come from China.
Mm-hmm. Really?
So the question is like, you know, President Trump is always talking about our trade deficit with China. He keeps dropping the number $800 billion, you know, trade deficit. And I know it's not just steel.
And that sounds like a scary number.
Yeah, it sounds like a scary number. But, you know, I know it's not just steel that's causing that $800 billion deficit. And I don't know how much 3%, 25% on top of the 3% that they're selling to us is going to affect.
It's going to really matter. And, and your numbers make some sense because China is also the world's biggest consumer of steel. So it makes sense that they would keep the vast majority of the steel that they produce for themselves.
And of course in the EU they're saying, okay, it's like if China realizes, well, it's too expensive to sell it to the US because they're now charging us 25% more, well, we're just going to go, and this is why the EU is afraid, because they say, well, now China's going to flood us with their cheap steel, and they're going to hurt our steel industry. So not just the 6 million American workers that could be in, you know, jeopardize, you know, for the steel after the fact and whatever they're doing it. So now you have the EU, and that's why EU is now saying, hey, if you impose these tariffs, well, we may end up putting tariffs on Harley Davidson motorcycles, Kentucky bourbon, peanut butter, and there was cranberries,
Levi's,
I know, was
jeans
on the list, and Levi jeans. They are hitting the heart of America when you deal with Harley Davidsons and Levi's.
You know what's probably going to happen, too, and this is already taking place, is China and whichever countries are targeted by this will sell their steel to somebody else who will then, in turn, because they're not on our list, they'll sell it through to us, and you're really not solving anything. And so that raises the question, is there a better way to address the trade imbalances other than slapping tariffs on it that's going to really do more damage than good to everybody?
Yeah. Well, obviously, that's a lot of negotiations and free trade agreements. And, you know, and I think the one thing that really kept, even though he signed the tariff late in the afternoon yesterday, like about like 1:30, 2 o'clock, is when he actually held the signing ceremony. And the markets just kind of shrugged it off. And I think a large part of it is because he just said, we're not going to include Mexico and Canada in this. How convenient, because we're obviously in the middle of negotiations with NAFTA and trying to revise that. And then he also opened the door and he goes, and, you know, case-by-case basis, other countries, we'll just bring them in and we'll see whether or not we want to, you know, do that to them. And so I thought that that was really interesting that, you know, and so consequently, I think the markets were like, whole big nothing burger, to coin a phrase. You know, and so they weren't reacting to it.
Yeah.
You know? But
maybe give some leverage in renegotiating NAFTA.
Right.
Yeah. So renegotiating NAFTA won't be as outlandish or as extreme as this. And so it gives them some leverage, maybe.
There you go.
Yeah.
And so then the other big headline that came out last night, that's the segue music. So we're moving on our topic list, was that before he actually had that announcement, he made an amazing brief moment in the briefing room. He's never been in the briefing room. And he's like shouting to the reporter. He goes, hey, big thing coming on North Korea in a little bit. And everyone just freaking out. Oh, that's fantastic. And then it's like last night we found out it was because that North Korea, or I'm not sure who invited who.
Right.
Well, I think it was worked out between the emissaries
right.
of North and South Korea. They kind of got together.
The South Korean folks
put this together and said, tell you what, let's see if we can get him to come over.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now it looks like there is going to be some meeting between President Trump and North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, President Kim Jong-un over there. And so my question, and, you know, and because they want to talk about denuclearization, and I think, you know, obviously that's a great thing. Let's talk about denuclearization. But here's the question. Who won in this little back and forth between Trump and President Kim? Who, and a lot of people don't know, you have to say President Kim. It's not President Jong-un. It's because of the last name, the surname.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Kim. So between Trump and Kim.
Last name's first and first name's
exactly,
last.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So between Trump and Kim, who won?
So as you said, as we were talking about before, North Koreans have always wanted to sit down with a U.S. president. So
right.
It seems like they've achieved something they've always wanted for a long time.
Because this is the first time, right? This is the first time a sitting president has ever sat with North Korea.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the reasons is...
With whom we are.
With whom?
We're still at war with them.
And how is that we're still at war with Korea?
We signed an armistice.
Okay.
But we didn't sign a peace agreement.
Yeah. So an armistice means, okay, we're just not going to fire at each other, but we're just going to keep...
Yeah, hold up.
Yeah.
We're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what, 80 years later?
Right.
50 years?
Yeah.
Math is not my strong suit.
I think it's 70. I think we're up to 70 years.
70 years, yeah.
Something like that. So we're still technically at war, but we're just not shooting.
Which is just amazing.
Well,
really.
it's stupid.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, do one thing or the other.
Yeah.
Finish this.
Exactly. Get it over with.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, they've got their own, they're isolated, you know, and they're, you know, they you know, that we like to think that they're not friends with anyone,
yeah.
but they are still obviously trading enough to be able to, you know, build a nuclear weapon
right.
and a missile to carry it on.
So in answer to your question, who won, this week maybe Kim did.
Yeah.
But it's a momentary small victory because this conversation is not going to take place until and unless North Korea agrees to certain stipulations. And those are fairly strict stipulations. And I think one reason that this has evolved the way that it has evolved is because the pressure that the Trump administration has been putting on the North Koreans is working.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of our allies have stepped up and fallen in line behind us, and they are also enforcing these sanctions,
mm-hmm.
and they're working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this hasn't happened in the last 70 years mm-hmm. in past administrations. It's always gotten to the point where they say, well, we want to do this and we want to do that, and we have acquiesced. And Mr. Trump doesn't acquiesce very often.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing is that, Trump, his responses, everybody was shocked.
Yeah.
It's like that no one has ever, you know, seen anyone. You know, we've never had a president who has responded to, you know, it's like, we're going to burn them in hellfire. And he goes, well, I'll bring some rain and fire and destruction down on you, too. And we're like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Well,
but like you said, it may be what's worked. Got these two people talking.
What really cracks me up, and you see on the screen behind us here, we've got at least three networks. For the past 15 months.
Yeah.
The Trump administration has been doing what it does best, getting results. And the networks act like this is a total surprise. Why? We've never heard of this before. What in the world is going on? You've been asleep at the switch, guys.
Yeah.
You know, this is what he does.
Well, yeah. What is the definition of insanity?
Doing it the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Expecting a different result.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been doing with North Korea. Now, of course, North Korea has been playing the game. And, you know, just to kind of turn it around, you know, my thought was that, you know, in a way, I think Kim is getting the upper hand on this one. Because, first of all, like I said, never have they been able to sit with talk with a sitting mm-hmm. president. Mm-hmm. And that's something that they've been wanting to do since, you know, since the armistice.
Right.
You know, and they've been the closest that we got was Secretary of State Madeleine Albright.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so they want this, and it's like you just know that they're going to play it up for all the propaganda that they can.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they should.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if that's the goal, then fine, you're going to get it. And maybe that's the carrot that we're offering in return for better conditions down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because this is part of the deal-making process And, you know, face it, hate him or love him, that's what Trump is good at, is making deals.
That's what he's got going on, you know. It's the art of the deal, but, you know, it's like, I don't know.
I might have favored nuclearizing Japan, but this is another way to go, I guess.
and actually, speaking of Japan, I did have a friend who actually made the point that, hey, but with us going now and dealing directly, this takes away leverage from China.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, because we had been relying on China. China says, hey, listen, if you want to deal with North Korea, you've got to agree with us on some of these other unrelated matters. Right. And now by doing this through South Korea and through Japan, with us dealing with them, China loses its leverage. Yeah. So that, you know, so that's a very interesting take.
Well, in our pre-show meeting, I described this as a three-dimensional chess game.
Yeah.
Because you've got all these moves that you can make between two or three countries, and then there are the sub-moves below the surface that aren't necessarily seen by everybody.
So if all of this is consistent, Trump is marginalizing China on every front.
So there you go.
Steel and North Korea.
Well, you know, he said he was going to go after China on the campaign trail.
Right.
You know, he said he was going to do it one way, you know, so it's like, instead of, you know, slap to the face, a punch to the gut, you know, but, you know, we'll see. Actually, speaking of chess, and you phrased it pretty interestingly, like all the king's men and women are queen. That was a really labored segue, and I apologize for that. But
it's all right.
Yeah, but you know, it's like Last week was Hope Hicks and Gary Cohn.
This week.
Mm-hmm. Was it just this week?
Yes.
Yeah.
I am so exhausted.
Over the
it was right
the
after the
thing.
Tariff.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So it was the tariff thing that we brought up, right? See, I can't even remember back to the beginning of this podcast. that's how long of a week it has been. But yeah, so yeah, we had Hope Hicks that she left after she got out there talking to Mueller and admitted that, sometimes she has to tell like little white lies on behalf
of the truth. Just
That's probably not the kind of thing you want to hear from someone who's so close to the president.
You know, call me cynical, but I wasn't surprised in the least.
That she left, or that she said it?
Why is this administration any different from any other past administration in terms of how you couch what you're doing,
right?
How you say things a certain way to get a certain result.
Mm-hmm.
They've all done it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally not surprised and not too terribly offended, because it's expected, really.
I think part of it is maybe just the fact that they refuse to really admit when they've been caught in the lie. Or, you know,
what is the nature of the lie? Are they lying to the press?
Well, what is the definition of is?
It
never ends.
Yeah. Certainly, it's not unprecedented for an administration to lie to the public.
And so she's out, and we go on. You know, who's next?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like we've had like more than 20 people who have had to resign or leave. Mm-hmm. And a question is, it's like, who's next? Could it be John Kelly? Just because of the way he handled the Porter investigation?
Just within the past 2 hours of this podcast being recorded, Lloyd Blankfein has said, well, he probably is going to be gone by the end of the year, too.
And Blankfein is?
The head Goldman Sachs.
The head of Goldman Sachs.
He's going to step down.
And the White House is Goldman Sachs East. So.
Yeah, exactly. And he has advised the president.
Yeah.
And Cohn was Goldman Sachs, right?
He was an ex-Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs. Of course, you know, he left because... And George Stephanopoulos on this week, on Sunday morning, when he actually opened up his show, he was like, okay, so Hope Hicks left. There's, you know, battle going on over the tariffs, and I can't even remember what the third element was. I think Stormy Daniels, don't play the segue music, we're not getting there yet. But he was saying any one of these would have been enough to, you know, fuel just one whole story. Right. But under this administration, you get like four crises a week, you know? And actually, Nuremberg, who we were talking about, and maybe we'll get
Sam
into that.
Sam Nuremberg,
he just apparently testified for the Mueller grand jury after going on this bizarre round of TV appearances saying he wasn't going to. A CNN anchor asked, have you been drinking? Because I think I can smell alcohol on your breath, which
Burnett
was hilarious. Aaron Burnett.
It's mouthwash. Mouthwash.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Listerine.
That's what I tell my wife. What are you going to say? I don't know. Oh, shoot. She's working okay.
This week we've been talking about The Bachelorette and all that soap opera garbage on television.
Right.
I don't understand the appeal of that show when you can see the same exact thing in reality every day of the week coming out of the White House.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, that is the ultimate
drama. That's a lot of drama. Yeah. And then actually, speaking about Sumner Nunberg and some of his weird appearances, and I think you have some sound for this, Brent.
Well, let me find it over here.
Yeah. He is cut number 38 here. Yeah, so he was out there talking about, and it happened on, of all days, International Women's Day.
Well, and that was yesterday. He actually, right. I think he said this Monday.
Oh, just before it.
In the ramp up, too, but still.
In one of those bizarre appearances. And he was asked about, Sarah Huckabee. And, you know, I guess she had, you know, maybe mouthed some, or she had said something critical of him.
Less than flattering things.
Less than flattering things about him.
Probably
and
warranted.
So, yeah. And so he responded by saying this to New York One.
You know what? You know what? If Sarah Huckabee wants to start debasing me, she's a joke. Okay, fine. Yeah, she's unattractive. She's a fat slob. Okay, fine. But that's irrelevant. The person she works for has a 30% approval rating. Okay? So if she wants to start attacking me, she can do that. That's fun. But we know it's a joke. Everybody knows it's a joke.
Oh, boy.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like the way he couches it, you know, how he couches the phrase of saying, okay, fine, yeah, she's unattractive, she's a fat slob. Like, everyone's accepting that as a fact. It's like, oh, well, yeah, okay, yeah, she's unattractive, she's a fat slob, but on top of that, she's a joke. And we're like, let's go back to this thing where you're, like, insulting a working mom
mm-hmm.
who is, you know, is, like, one of the most out front, you know, taking the front and center for, mm-hmm. you know, is like one of the most high-profile jobs. That's what it's going to be. One of the most high-profile jobs in the world.
Arguably one of the worst jobs in the world.
I no matter who you
kind
work
of a thankless
under.
Exactly.
Job.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the guys who've had that job in the past,
right.
regardless of administration.
Yeah.
And that's a pressure cooker right there.
Yeah, it is a big pressure cooker. I have a feeling, though, that it's going to be harder for anyone from this administration to go on and have careers after this.
Mm-hmm. You think?
Yeah, I think so. I just have a sense. Well, it's like if you took a look at, my gosh, I'm drawing a blank on the first one. The one who first came out was profiled by Melissa McCarthy. Sean Spicer, thank you. I don't know why I remember Melissa McCarthy, but not Sean Spicer.
Yeah, no, that tells you something, right?
We will forever remember Melissa McCarthy instead of Sean Spicer. Yeah.
You know what? Sean Spicer would actually be a really good name for like a Spider-Man villain, wouldn't it? The Spicer. Sean Spicer, the Spicer, you know, and it's all about pepper spray and things that make you sneeze and things that make you cry. And it's like, I can disorient you with it. Blowing a little...
We just lost Mike. He just went over the edge.
I know. I just went into...
Mike just jumped
the
shark.
You know, eventually I'm going to turn it all back into comic books and pop culture.
That's an intriguing storyline concept, though.
Yeah, just the idea...
Spice Man.
Oh, that. Oh, not my premise that these people are going to have harder times getting the job.
Oh, no. Forget that. Who cares?
Let's talk about that. But, you know, it's like... Because you look, it's like he's going out. He actually did a little bit of a tour, a little bit of an apology tour, you might say, where he was basically talking to us. Yeah, listen, you know, one of my biggest regrets was how I came out on that very first... On day one, saying, it was the biggest inauguration... Period.
Right.
You know, and he admits, that probably wasn't the best approach. You know that wasn't going to be his approach.
The tough thing about that gig is you've got to stay close to the company line.
Yeah.
Regardless of what your personal feelings might be, even though your personal feelings are going to be injected into that conversation. I mean, you look at the way Sarah Huckabee is handling the press right now.
Right.
She doesn't take anything off anybody, and I respect her for that.
Yeah.
She may be telling the line that they want her to tell, too, but I think deep down inside, she's being about as honest as she can be.
Honest as she's allowed to be.
That's true.
You know, and sometimes, you know, it's like sometimes as I had said earlier today, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and it's like she obviously knows much more than she's saying, but she's only saying because it's like when you do, then you can come up and you can just say, this is as much as I'm going to say about those things. Segue.
See, the point of the music is... So you don't have to say segue.
Oh, I thought the music was my cue to say segue.
You could step back from the camera and do a tap dance if you want.
A little air guitar. It's like, where is Mike going? He's doing the duck walk on here. So So anyway, yeah. So actually, you know, because this week talking about Sarah Sanders and what knowledge she does or doesn't have, uh-huh. she accidentally kind of let it leak that President Trump was party to this non-disclosure agreement or this court fight over it with Stormy Daniels. And there's a lot of people who groan when I just say the name Stormy Daniels, if not for the fact it's not her real name. I think Clifford is her last name. And so, yeah.
Stormy Daniels. Clifford?
Sarah Clifford. Stephanie Clifford? Yeah, is that it? Stephanie?
Really?
I think that's it, okay. Yeah.
You knew that? I'm going to give you grief about this. Oh, look who knew the name of the porn star.
It's like, why are we even giving this woman any time at all?
Yeah.
I mean, how does this add in a positive way to the public discourse in America this week? Yeah. I don't understand that.
My argument for why this is a story that we need to be paying attention to now is, first of all, this weekend, she's going to be on 60 Minutes, apparently with Anderson Cooper and her lawyer.
Thanks for the warning.
Yeah, just a heads up. This weekend, and we're gonna be talking about that, this Sunday is going to be a hot TV night. But, this weekend on 60 Minutes, Stormy Daniels, Anderson Cooper, and the big thing here is that...
At least she won't have to worry about him hitting on her.
Let me hit my cough button.
No.
Oh, no. Okay. So, but the big thing is like, and you catch this, in any other administration.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, any other administration lies. That's true. Any other administration is a thankless job to be that spokesperson. But if any other administration where we had a president who was being accused of, you know, sexually molesting women, and one of the women making those accusations claims that she had an affair, within a year after his wife gave birth, and you know, they're concerned enough that they pay her $130,000 to stay quiet about it right before the election, in the middle of all of that.
And this would be huge. Personally.
And the mm-hmm. lawyer played personally, and you know, and so now it's just falling apart because now this week she's suing, saying, "Look, Donald Trump did not sign the non-disclosure agreement, so I should not be held to it because he did not sign." And when you look at it, yeah, even a former counsel to Trump says, "Yeah, this is not good because of the fact he didn't sign it. It's invalid." And I think that's why she's having this discussion now.
Did she sign it?
She signed it.
Did she get the money?
She got the money.
Then there you go.
But there were three spots on there that needed to be signed, or four. Her and her lawyer.
But she agreed to it. His lawyer, and she was paid. So she needs to keep her yap shut.
But now she's saying that Trump didn't. And, you know, so consequently, it's like, you got to sign on those bottom lines.
Well, you know, so when you sleep with snakes, ..
There you go. But what we're talking about here is that we are talking about a woman who is making an accusation. President Trump was coming out and saying every single woman who has said these things is a liar, and I'm going to sue them. And the one woman who came out apparently with enough information that was dangerous,
except for this, he
paid to shut her up, and that's why I think that this is relevant. Whether or not they say, "Oh well, we knew what we were getting for." And my friend Charlotte, who did not just write to say hello,
did she know about the metal question?
The which one?
The metal question?
She did not. No, she actually...
Charlotte.
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. But she wrote in to say, "Frankly, I could care less about who our presidents or their wives sleep with. My concern is doing your job," which is valid. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know.
Well, that was the same defense that the Clintons gave when Bill was sleeping around with Monica Lewinsky, even though he said he didn't have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky.
And Republicans and the evangelicals, they were slamming him. And now the evangelicals are giving Trump a pass.
Here's the difference, though.
Okay.
Bill Clinton was president when that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
This occurred
in the White House.
Donald Trump was private Q citizen.
Right.
Doesn't make it right or wrong, but the circumstances are vastly different.
I guess part of it is that...
Although some of the criticism of Clinton, too, was of his life before he was president, although he was governor at the time of Jennifer Flowers.
Yeah.
Clinton. I mean, it's like, of course, you know, he's not like any other previous president. I mean, you talk about Kennedy and the mm-hmm. affairs that he had, right?
So, By the way, the Mary Jo Kopechne movie is coming out about that.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
You haven't seen the ads for that?
I haven't seen anything for that.
We'll talk about that next week on the podcast.
Yeah, I'll tune in for that. I'll probably be here because Lance is out skiing.
Right.
So
snowboarding.
Snowboarding.
Snowboarding, yeah. I apologize because he's cool. He said he's going to teach his family how to snowboard. So,
hope his health care insurance is paid up.
Exactly. What were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about you know, going back to the, you know, I mean, it's like Clinton, you know, he was accused of having all these affairs and he kept denying it and stuff like that. And then it was just like, you know, there were a lot of people that's like, how can we have a president? You want to have someone in there that has some sense of moral authority, you know, and honestly, well, it's like thinking back. Huh?
A sense of decorum.
A sense of decorum.
Yeah.
I mean, Obama had it, you know, and the Bushes had it, you know, and, you know, it's like, what is it so hard for us as a society to find someone who hasn't been, you know, at least, you know, maybe you sleep with, you know, one or two women, but not so blatant that you actually have, like, the women coming out of the paint, out of the woodwork, rather. I couldn't get the words right there. I don't know. But anyway, but thank you, Charlotte, for the comment. And, you know, I did finally get around to talking to her. I don't think she's still tuning in. But actually, speaking of, as we talked about, this Sunday night is going to be huge because in addition to the 60 Minutes interview with Stormy Daniels, now we have this huge face-off with ABC and Fox. And, let me just front here by saying, it's like, did you watch American Idol? Were you an American Idol fan?
I was not a big American Idol fan. I know about it, but not a huge fan.
You never watched it?
No, not really.
Not even for... Fun. See, the best part was when Simon Cowell would just eviscerate
That was the value of the show. That was getting to see him completely tear somebody apart.
Right.
And then, but the secondary benefit was... You saw some incredible talent come across that stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of whom are major, major stars now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who probably would not have otherwise been discovered were they not on American
Idol. We would
Idol.
Never have Kelly Clarkson, who I love.
Yeah.
We would never have Kelly Clarkson. We would never have, I don't know, anyone else. Oh, the country, Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood.
Oh, wow.
Carrie Underwood, yeah, she was great. You know, and that was great. Actually, and I'm gonna see if I can pull it up here. See if we can. If you play me a little here, these are some of the best of Simon Cowell's best insults here. This was from season 8, and a viewer named
was Boston on the show.
apparently, I don't know. This is not a cow. Let's see. I don't know if you can hear that.
Okay, I can't listen to
Before
this anymore.
You go!
I can't listen to this. I really, really can't. It's just awful. It's everything I hate.
Yes.
I hate everything. I mean, the whole act is excruciatingly bad.
Wow.
Honestly, it's just terrible.
But look at this. I have like my friend here.
He's bringing out a little puppet now.
Is you.
And yeah, so.
With a lion.
So the guy was singing with a puppet?
Well, he was singing and he was running around and really over dramatic. And now he's holding the lion up in front. And I think he's seeing the Lion King. But you know, it's like the one good thing that was really good for Cal and American Idol was, you know, that he was really insultive. So now.
Oh, yeah.
But now we're a nicer, gentler society. No more bullying. No more, you know, objectifying people in those manners.
No harsh judgments.
Yeah, no more harsh judgment. Everything's going to be, you know what? This probably isn't the right thing for you, which is probably what Lance is going to say when he comes back and hears that I took charge of this podcast. Probably not the right thing.
No.
But, you know, and so now we're coming back. American Idol returns on Sunday night. Woohoo! Yeah. Wow, we're already coming up on time, or is this a segue?
It's a segue.
I missed the cue again. So anyway, so American Idol is coming back, and on the panel we have Lionel Richie and Katy Perry and a couple others. There's a country singer, not Blake Shelton, because he's on The Voice. you know, but you know, it's just not going to be the same if we don't have Cal getting up there and insulting the people and literally making them cry.
And Lionel Richie is a gentleman.
Yeah,
really is.
And Katy Perry is all about, you know, it's like she's going to let you down with that velvet glove, you know. But, you know, it's just not going to be the same. And, of course, it used to be on Fox. And so now, you know, of course, they're playing this up. The dream is back. American Idol is back.
Right.
And so what's going to happen? So Fox, what do they do? They're coming up. O.J. Simpson, The Lost Confession.
The Lost Confession.
Guess which one I'm going to watch.
They're going to compete against the show that they used to have.
That's right. Yeah, Fox is going against it. Now, here's the story behind this. Now, back in 2006, after the criminal trial for the murders of Nicole and Ron Goldman, and after the civil trial. Then he ended up getting together with a publisher and to produce this book, which they titled If I Did It, which is probably the worst advice. I can't believe his lawyer let him do it, even after all the trials.
His lawyer's head didn't explode.
Exactly. And so he is going to come out saying, if I did it, and where he says, here's what he imagines probably really happened, in which he also implicates that there was a second person there named Charlie. I don't know why or how he comes up with that name. You know,
Charlie.
Now, it was going to come out with a book back in 2006, but the Goldman family objected and sued and got the rights to the book and got the rights to the interview. And so the interview never aired. They did publish the book. Although on the book cover, where it says, if I did it, the word if is very, very small.
Tiny.
Exactly. Yeah. So it just says, I did it by O.J. Simpson. And so they published the book. And so now they agreed because they are getting cut of it. So now they're going to let the interview air.
So that's ABC?
Fox.
Fox.
That's on Fox.
Fox. ABC's got American Idol.
Right.
So what's on CBS and NBC?
I don't know.
That's what I want to know.
CBS is probably going to have another geriatric solving crimes, something. You know,
yeah.
After the 60 Minutes, and then it's going to be, you know, some another.
What is it with these cold case shows that, you know, and you've got this, I don't remember the guy's name, the anchor that tells these stories in a very intimidating voice. We're going to review this, and I'm going to also add a sardonic twist to my narration.
Right.
I don't know who that guy is.
Well, Keith Morrison over at NBC. Keith Morrison, he is the best. It really kind of like, it's like, wow, but she never knew that her husband was waiting right back at the house. You know, he has the best narration.
You know what I like to
Bill do? Hader did a great impression, too.
I'd like to see a crime show narrated by golf announcers.
Yeah.
So the husband is about to come home, and he's going to discover the house has been broken into. Here's the key. There's the turn on the knob. The door is open.
I think you're onto something here.
Yeah, it's like, we could do that.
Exactly. Yeah, he never saw that one coming, Bob. He never saw that 9-iron coming down on his skull.
You could have a winner there.
I should
right
not
after
be,
Spice
I
Man.
Should not be after Spice Man, starring Sean Spicer, and then you know season 2400 of Family Guy and The Simpsons over on Fox. This is what they're showing instead of Simpsons and Bob's Burgers and Simpsons and Family Guy.
Simpsons. And O.J. Simpson.
And exactly.
Makes perfect
That's
sense.
That's right. Fox really should pair it up with, you know, the O.J. Simpsons. I think they need to do Homer Simpson's If I Ate It.
If I Ate It. That's pretty good.
Oh, man. So we have 100% gone off the rails. New movies coming out this weekend. I think Death Wish, the remake of Death Wish with Bruce Willis
that
is coming out.
That looks really good.
I've heard, you know, that the reviews have been, you know, they're mixed, you know, they like it for what it is. They're not sure if Bruce Willis was the right character for that. I heard a lot of reviewers saying Josh Brolin, who is apparently in every movie from here on out.
Yeah.
Especially the superhero movies.
A lifetime contract with somebody.
Exactly, yeah.
Charles Bronson is a tough act to follow.
But you watch him now and you're like, why was anyone intimidated by Charles Bronson? You know, it's like at least Bruce Willis has the bald head. That makes him a little more intimidating.
Yeah. Bruce Willis adds a certain, I don't know, quirkiness to it.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, he's doing the work that he should do, but he's got a gleam in his eye.
Yeah. But we all know that Black Panther is still going to win because the repeat viewing, people have been going crazy. They're saying it's still going to be topping out $90 million this
weekend.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's just a monster out there. Yeah. So it's really amazing. So, yeah, right now it's made $516 million so far.
All right.
There you go.
Well, folks, we appreciate you watching us this afternoon. You can catch us on iTunes and Stitcher. Just look for the Underbelly Podcast and find us on Facebook or online at Real Investment News and Real Investment Advice. John Kamurianic. That's the first time I fouled that up.
That's right.
10.
And Mike O'Neill, thank you very much. We appreciate you. Y'all have a good weekend. Thanks for watching us.
Bye-bye.
See ya.